Welcome to the CDH Conversations podcast. I'm Hugo Pina. I'm a director of the Employment Law Department at CDH. So today we will be speaking about the Employment Equity Amendment Bill and the impact that that passing of the bill will have on employers. Joining me is Abigail Butcher, an associate in the Employment Law Department, and a clever one that is, if I may add. So let's kick off immediately, Abby. Before we discuss the impact of the bill on employers, etc., can you indicate when we can expect implementation here?
Thank you, Prof, and thanks for having me. So we're looking to see the implemented changes from this amendment bill on an estimate of about September 2023. The bill is at the moment sitting with the president, awaiting signature, and we'll see implementation between 10 to 12 months after signature. So September 2023 is really a ballpark, but a date to start looking at if employers are wanting to change, manage the process with the amendments.
So it has gone through Parliament, it has gone through provinces, it's just awaiting the signature of the President.
That's correct, Prof.
All right. Now, let's look at the major changes this bill proposes, if you just want to highlight that for us, please, Abby, and then we will go into each of those.
So we're seeing a couple of quite significant changes with this bill. The first is the change to the definition of designated employer. That's the current definition in terms of the Act. And the introduction of a discretion by the minister to set sectoral numerical targets, which we'll discuss in more detail. Then we're also seeing a change to the definition of people with disabilities, as well as the removal of the requirement for the Health Professionals Council of South Africa to certify psychological testing. And lastly, there's some practical changes to the submission of employment equity reports, or rather a discretion by the minister to make regulations regarding the submission of employment equity reports.
So let's unpack the first major change. And this is now the extent to which the definition of a designated employer has been changed with regard to the smaller employer. Take us through that, please, Abby.
Thanks, Prof. Under the current Act, a designated employer means, amongst other things, but most importantly for the purposes of this discussion, an employer who employs 50 or more employees, or an employer who employs fewer than 50 employees, but has an annual turnover that is equal to or above a threshold determined in terms of the Act. So that threshold is sector specific. So for example, in transport, storage and communications, it's 30 million rand. In agriculture, it's 6 million rand. So there is an inclusion versus exclusion in relation to designated employers. If you meet the definition of a designated employer, you are required to comply with Chapter 3 of the Act. If you are not a designated employer, then you are exempt from compliance, but you are permitted to have voluntary compliance. So the Act provides for voluntary compliance by employers who are not designated employers. Now, the bill amends the definition of designated employer in that employers who employ less than 50 employees, so as you've termed them, smaller employees, Prof, who meet an annual threshold, will no longer form part of the definition of designated employers and therefore will not be required to comply with Chapter 3. This seems to be a move by the Department of Labor amidst an outcry almost from small, medium and macro enterprises that the Act is quite onerous, to move towards a less onerous provision for these types of companies to encourage development, as these small employees will now no longer have to develop and implement employment equity plans, and they'll not have to submit employment equity reports to the Department of Equity and Labor. So in essence, there's no duty there to apply affirmative action. Notwithstanding, though, it's important for all employers to remember that irrespective of designated employer or not, all employees remain bound to the provisions of Chapter 2 of the Employment Equity Act, which deals with the prohibition of unfair discrimination.
So, Abby, the turnover you're referring to is the total annual turnover, and I've noted that mining and quarrying would be 22.5, manufacturing 30 million. So it was a threshold that could be easily reached under the current dispensation.
100%, Prof. And I think what's interesting is that the intention of the amendment bill was to fast-track what was termed too slow a transformation amongst industries in terms of employment equity. And it's almost a contradiction that small enterprises who quite easily met that annual threshold turnover to become designated employers will now be excluded from employment equity provisions. So it both gives and takes away.
But undoubtedly, my sense is it'll now focus on the larger corporations, and we can already see the approach by the department and different inspectors focusing on them.
100%, Prof.
So they'll continue to have to apply, in particular to Chapter 3, ensure proper progress and the like in terms of affirming people from designated groups.
Which is what we want to see, Prof, in terms of speeding up transformation in this country and employment equity compliance.
Absolutely. So let's just unpack a bit these provisions under Chapter 3 that will now not be applicable anymore to these so-called smaller employers. Do you just want to highlight some of those for us?
So, Prof, in order to do so, I'll need to run you through some of the obligations of a designated employer under Chapter 3 of the Act. So, under Chapter 3, designated employers are required to implement measures to ensure that suitably qualified people from designated groups have equal employment opportunities and are equitably represented in all occupational levels in the world. So that's one thing that non-designated employers would not have to comply with that designated employers still do. Now, the Act fleshes out how you do that. How do you implement these measures and what are your obligations as a designated employer? So the first thing is that a designated employer must conduct an analysis of its employment policies, practices, and procedures in the working environment in order to identify, and this is quite specific, employment barriers. So this analysis, no more a requirement, Prof. Definitely so an requirement of a designated employer. So these are two things that non-designated employers would not have to do.
And then they must consult.
Yes. So we've said designated employers must implement measures to remove employment barriers, but in order to do so, they need to consult on very specific things. So we've said they need to conduct an analysis, they need to prepare an employment equity plan, and they need to submit a report to the Director General annually. And these are the matters that require consultation on the Act. So the consultation requirement, and the Act specifically says that when you consult, you must attempt to reach agreement, must be done with a representative trade union representing members at the workplace and its employees or representatives, but where there's no representative trade union, with employees nominated by other employees. So to bring an example in there, to make it a bit clearer, in circumstances where there's no trade union representation, so let's take, for example, the firm or any firm, the consultation there would take place with employees themselves that have been nominated as opposed to a representative trade union.
And ordinarily, employers have these employment equity forums that they also consult through on a regular basis during the year to keep themselves updated and ensure that there's progress made. For the designated employer, that remains in place. For the non-designated employer, the now smaller employer, once a bill has been passed, this will no longer apply.
Exactly.
And Abby, the Section 21 report you've spoken about, that is the report to be submitted in terms of progress with all those forms that you complete. And then there's the Section 27 income differential report, which of course goes to different institutions, but insofar that's part of Chapter 3, also no longer applicable for the smaller employer.
Also no longer applicable, but for designated employers to note, the Amendment Bill puts in place an empowerment of the minister to make regulations with regards to the submission of these employment equity reports. And so we haven't seen these regulations yet. They'll obviously only come into place once these amendments are effective and they form part of the Act. And it's going to be quite interesting to see, and employers will need to keep quite a close watch on the regulations that the minister puts in place, because it has a significant practical impact on the way that employers ensure that they're compliant with the Act.
So getting to that part now, Abby, the second major implication of this bill would be the setting of numerical targets by the minister for certain sectors.
Absolutely, Prof. It's my understanding that the purpose of introducing these targets is likely to be to ensure the equitable representation of people from designated groups, so historically disadvantaged groups such as race, gender, and disability at all occupational levels in the workplace. So under the amended Act, the minister will be empowered to identify national economic sectors for purposes of the administration of the EA. So that's the first step, is the minister can determine sectors. And the second step is that the minister is empowered to set numerical targets for each of these sectors. So prior to this, employers could set their own numerical targets and goals, considering various factors such as labor turnover, organizational growth, skills availability, and also taking into account the economically active population. Now, with this discretion afforded to the minister is entitled, in consultation with the Employment Equity Commission, to publish proposals identifying sectors and sectoral numerical targets, and then allow interested parties to comment on these, but in effect, introduce these targets for compliance in specific sectors. So what employers need to keep in mind here is that should numerical targets be imposed, any plans which were envisioned to operate between 3 to 5 years, which are already in existence, will fall away and will need to be revised. In addition, what these sectoral numerical targets will do is that employers will be measured against not only the demographic profile of either the national or regionally economically active population, but also the sectoral numerical targets set by the minister. So it's quite an onerous obligation that's being created here.
So the first thing, Abby, we're talking about targets. We're definitely not talking about quotas.
No, Prof. It's very different to quotas.
And in terms of the rights of the employer, there's now this publication by the minister about setting or proposing numerical targets, and then they must respond to that or make proposals within 30 days.
That's correct, Prof. And I think what's interesting about this is the publication proposes the identification of sectors as well as the numerical targets that apply to those sectors. So it's almost as though a comment can come on both sides. So it can be, well, we arguably don't belong to that sector. And also, this is why we think that, you know, we have these comments on those specific numerical targets for that sector. So it's a two-pronged approach there. And it's two issues on which employees would be able to comment once they've seen the publication from the minister.
So now the employer submits the report, and that must now, as you say, take into consideration national and local numbers, including what the minister has said. And in terms of that, the employer will then be measured as to whether the employer has taken reasonable steps to appoint and promote suitably qualified people from those designated groups.
That's correct, Prof. So compliance will be assessed, and the various steps after the establishment of compliance and non-compliance will then be taken in terms of the Act.
So where the employer itself has set targets that would be too low in terms of a plan, the directive by or the regulation by the minister will override that.
Exactly, Prof. And I think that that's why employers need to keep a close watch on the identification of these sectors and the numerical targets which are proposed, because it could radically transform their workforce. It could radically transform the requirements for them to be compliant with the Employment Equity Act. There's also a lot to be said for the fact that in consultation with the Employment Equity Commission, these numerical targets will also take into account things like the national economically active population, as well as the regional economically active population. So those are factors that will be taken into account.
And Abby, you've now submitted the report, and after a year or two, there's an inspection and you've not complied. This is a type of matter that can eventually, once they've imposed fines, can go to the Labour Court, or the Labour Court can impose fines.
Exactly, Prof. So a compliance order can be issued, and in the event of non-compliance, that matter can then be taken to the Labour Court, and fairly significant fines imposed depending on which provision of the Employment Equity Act the company hasn't complied with and the number of times that they have made the same offence.
Right. Let's just go back just to make it easier for the people who must currently comply, the larger corporations and companies. Just come back to this issue of consultation with the department and all of that. Do you currently know what the status is?
Yes. So consultation has begun in terms of numerical targets. So the Department of Labour has confirmed that engagements on the setting of these targets started as early as June 2019. So up to 18 sectors have been consulted, which, you know, not in numerous classes, but it includes education, water supply, sewage management and remediation, human health and social work, agriculture, retail, administrative and support sectors, professional, scientific and technical sectors. But consultation has been widespread to date. And I think we can see that by September 2023, we will start seeing the publication of sectoral numerical targets.
Thank you, Abby. Now, Abby, there's this qualification of qualifying for state contracts in terms of Section 53 of the Act. Will you unpack that for us, please?
So, Prof, the sectoral numerical targets will impact an employer's eligibility to be awarded a state contract. So there will be a requirement for compliance. So Section 53 of the Act is going to be amended to say that the minister may only issue a certificate, so a certificate saying that you can contract with the state, if the minister is satisfied that the employer has complied with the numerical targets set out in Section 15A and which apply to the employer. So over and above the compliance that we understand in terms of the Act at the moment, there will also then be required compliance with those sectoral numerical targets in order to contract with the state.
I think from a practical point, it will be difficult, but strictly speaking, it could mean halfway through a contract. It's now a five-year contract, midterm, you've not met targets, and you've been identified as a non-compliance person. That could effectively cause the state to cancel the agreement on these grounds.
Effectively, yes, Prof. And I think that's why employees need to keep a firm grip on the potential effects that these amendments may have on specifically their industries and their company, and perhaps manage the expectations in terms of service level agreements or negotiations or consultations with third-party service providers to say these are coming, we can't anticipate what the requirements will be, and then try and manage that process in a relationship context.
Thank you. Now, let's move on to the next point and this definition of people with disabilities. And we know that has caused quite a headache in the implementation of the Act. Is the bill making that easier? How does it deal with it?
I'm not sure if we can say easier, Prof, but definitely more inclusive. Currently, under the Employment Equity Act, a disability must be permanent. But with the newly proposed amendments, any recurring condition that limits a person's movements, senses, or activities in executing their tasks will also now be considered. So this is an effort by the Department of Labor to align the definition of persons with disabilities with the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And the definition will read now as follows: people who have a long-term or recurring physical, mental, intellectual, or sensory impairment which, in interaction with various barriers, may substantially limit their prospects of entry into or advancement in employment. And I think what's really interesting here is to note recurring mental, intellectual, or sensory. I think a lot of the understanding about disability in the workplace is the physical presentation of disability, but the inclusion here of mental, intellectual, and sensory really opens up avenues into various other forms of disability which may not be prevalent in the employer's mind.
And explain to us this amendment of the psychological testing terms of the bill.
So, Prof, prior to these proposed amendments, there was a requirement that for any psychological testing that an employer conducts, in order for that psychological testing to be utilized, it needed to be certified by the Health Professionals Council of South Africa. And, you know, we can discuss that the reason behind that being was likely that we wanted those psychological tests to be in line with common practice in terms of the Health Professionals Council. So this requirement has now been removed. And this is due to the concern that psychological testing could lead to exclusionary practices, especially in a country as culturally diverse as South Africa. The other difficulty is that the actual capacity of the Health Professionals Council to fulfill certification requirements has been legally challenged. So essentially, the HPCSA is unable to get to all of the required certifications, and therefore they will no longer require that in relation to psychological testing.
So this is good news. It now has considered the fact whether it's meets the requirements of being culturally fair, taking into consideration all the previous disadvantages suffered by our people and mitigating against those.
Exactly, Prof.
Thank you. Well, that concludes and brings the discussion of today to an end. We thank you for joining us, and we will definitely do a follow-up and unpack some of these provisions in more practical terms. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.